Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work Plus here in the Merry Marvel Watching Society. And this is a big one because you have happened upon our Days of Future Past film review, which is certainly the culmination of our X-Watch to date and arguably the high point of the X franchise. Certainly some people seem to think so. Kyle, you and I have not gotten to talk about this movie since 2020, I guess, when we kind of parachuted in and did a quick discussion of this that summer. But now, you know, as we've been watching through the whole series, a lot of which you had never seen and most of which I had not seen in some time, I feel like we're both coming to this movie with a pretty different perspective. Did you feel that sitting down to watch this one?
Yeah, for sure. I have so many things I want to say about this episode. It's going to blow your mind.
Wow.
Let me start here for a second. You like this movie, right? Part of the reason we had fun recording our 2020 episode is because we both liked the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think at the time, I haven't gone back and listened to the episode, I think that I remember being a little surprised that I didn't like it more on that watch. Like I think
that's
that I went
remember.
Into it and then was like, oh, this is, and then I was thinking about that as I was watching this time too, because again, it's that same conversation of how much the setting impacts it, because I do feel like in 2020, we were still in such the afterglow of the Infinity Saga that I think back to a lot of things that I almost wonder if I wasn't just in the headspace to allow anything else to really take hold. But now that enough time has passed, I think maybe the perspective shifts, which is not to say things get better or worse, But yeah, that was, I think that we both still liked it, but I do have this vague recollection of feeling a little bit like I had hot takes. I think that's where my reputation for McAvoy hate came from.
That's exactly how I remember it as well. Okay, let me kick us off here. The first thing I need to say is I think if you are able to lay some of the continuity issues aside, you have to be able to set some of the continuity errors aside. Some of the stuff we talked about in The Wolverine,
right,
that still applies here. So while watching all of the other X-Men films definitely put me in a different mindset, like you're saying, and prepped me well for this, you do need to set aside some of that stuff. Otherwise, I don't think you're going to enjoy it as much. The other thing I'll say is I watched this film about 2 weeks ago, and then I went home and rewatched the Rogue Cut, as promised, with my wife.
Interesting.
And I really strongly disliked the Rogue Cut. This is not a Snyderverse thing for me, where there were little scenes that were either added or subtracted that improved the film. I felt like almost everything that was added was a detriment to the film. And the person who edited down the theatrical cut did all of the right things. So that's the second thing I need to say. Watching the road cut took some of the shine away. But here's my overarching point. I freaking love this movie.
Wow.
I love Days of Future Past. I love it.
So
I think that technically, if you were a film critic and trying to be really critical, you would probably say that X2 is a better film, but Days of Future Past is my favorite X-Men film. So this would be my number one. I am like a lot of our listeners. I just, from the second I turned it on and I have a whole page of notes, I was like, yep, this is my genre. Now we're here. We made it. Again, you have to set aside those continuity errors. Like if you were just watching it as it's not a standalone film because of how it's tying in all the others. But I mean, like if you're watching it as a standalone film and willing to acknowledge that it doesn't acknowledge those other movies as much, I think it's fantastic, man. And I think it's a fascinating time to be talking about it because a couple of weeks ago I put out my initial reactions to Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And one of our listeners on Discord, Kyle, reminded me that both of these films came out in 2014. And so I think there's a little bit of like, how in the world did I miss Days of Future Past a little bit? And how is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes not a bigger thing in people's memory? And Robbie, not to shift the discussion to this, but in 2014, and you've told me this before, but in 2014, that year had Guardians of the Galaxy, Winter Soldier, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Days of Future Past, Interstellar, Ex Machina, Godzilla, and then on the non-blockbuster front, also had Whiplash, Grand Budapest Hotel, Birdman, Nightcrawler, Kingsman.
Oh, yeah, and Birdman.
I do think there's a little bit of, for me, Days of Future Past getting a little bit lost in the shuffle because of the timing, but also because that's when I was fully buying into the MCU. So I kind of didn't want to like it. And then with Planet of the Apes, a little bit that it just got lost in the shuffle of that year. But anyways, I'll let you talk. I love Days of Future Past.
Yeah, I mean, and in fairness, I think Days of Future Past was a massive hit. I think that...
Yeah, that's why I said it got lost in the shuffle for me specifically.
Oh, right. Yeah. But I do think, I mean, it's a fair point. Like, and I've joked before about how The Amazing Spider-Man 2 came out in that year as well, which was a real, that whole franchise picked the two worst years to release anything in 2012 and 2014.
Yeah. Fair.
But it's actually interesting that you bring up the MCU films that dropped that year, because as I sat down to watch this again, this was my first time watching it since last time, and this was my first time ever watching the road cut. Now, I want to say at the start, I have not seen the theatrical cut recently enough to know all of the differences. So I looked up a list, but there may be things that, since you've watched both recently, you're probably more aware of the changes. So I may have to ask you certain things to make sure that I'm talking about scenes that actually exist in the real version.
Well, after your opening thought, let's start there. Let's start with the road cut specifically.
Okay. But yes, before I get there, my first kind of big picture thought was this is so much of kind of like a precursor to Avengers Endgame.
Oh, for sure.
Like, and not just like the time travel of it, but even the like, okay, here are all the dangling threads that have been left out there. Now, granted, the X-Men universe wasn't really, there was no architect, so there was no way to tie all of those up. But, you know, it's Bryan Singer coming back to the franchise for the first time in a directing capacity since X2. So it's been, you know, 11 years of him getting to watch that franchise kind of go down the drain in a lot of ways, and coming back and kind of, you know, being able to utilize some of what he worked on with Matthew Vaughn on First Class to then also go back and undo the issues that he felt Ratner caused with X3 and all that. But like, even just story wise, returning to all of these kind of key moments, having these follow-up interactions, having callbacks, like these lines everywhere where it's like him saying you're Beast the first time he sees like Nicholas Holt's character when Wolverine's gone back. Wolverine saying, oh, you know, I've been in a lot of wars, which is kind of one of at least two references in this movie to X-Men Origins Wolverine, which I did not remember. The whole conversation about Mystique and, you know, when she's Raven and when she turns into Mystique, and even just that moment of hearing Wolverine say like, okay, well, if that was the first time she killed, it certainly wasn't the last. And like really at least trying to stitch together, like, yes, the character that we know as Mystique that Rebecca Romijn played in the trilogy is in fact the same character that we met as Jennifer Lawrence. And then the fact that like the character design for her changes to reflect that, like there were all these things where it's like, okay, again, this is a messy, messy universe, but I feel like with what they had to work with, that it's one of the reasons why, like, I feel if we were not getting ready for Deadpool and Wolverine, and if someone were just asking, hey, can you give me like the best X-Men movie viewing experience, I would almost certainly stop here and then use Logan as like an epilogue, because this is just such a perfect way to end the entire thing. And I understand why they went the route they did. And I want to talk about that more at the end of the episode. But I think that if you look at this as the conclusion in the same way that we do Endgame, there are not many examples of movies that conclude like an overarching franchise this effectively. And right. I think that the reason now that it maybe gets lost in the shuffle in retrospect is because whereas like Endgame did that and stuck that landing, like I think in part because you had RDJ and Chris Evans leave in such memorable ways that it really did feel like, okay, like, yes, the MCU still exists, but this is the end of a thing. And I think because the way Days of Future Past did set up the future of that franchise, the longer we go, like, the less impact it seems to have had.
Yeah.
But again, that's not to say really anything about the quality of the film itself. And so we shouldn't import too much of the legacy back, but that's like
exactly
really long way of saying like, yeah, I had a blast watching this too. Like if last time I watched it, I was disappointed or kind of surprised that I didn't like it more this time. You know, I came into this rewatch thinking and saying, I think on the podcast, everyone says Days of Future Past is their favorite X-Men movie. X2 is mine. And I'm kind of with you. If anything, it's like a 1A, 1B thing. And part of it is preference. Like, I think the thing that it reminds me of in some ways is like, if you're going to compare Spider-Man 2 and No Way Home, where I think Spider-Man 2 is the tighter, like, scene for scene movie. And I think that it stands up more on its own. But I think that the part of me that's just like loves the character of Spider-Man and exploring that world, like, No Way Home offers some things that Spider-Man 2 can't. And Days of Future Past is, I think, in a lot of ways tighter still than No Way Home. It's a little bit more like indulgent than X2 is, because, you know, we're getting into more like Easter egg territory, and like anytime you're making those connections, you risk that. But even just looking at it like from the perspective of what makes an X-Men story, like, where am I going to get all of the little bits of things that I've come to associate with the X franchise? I think I can say no movie has done that as effectively as Days of Future Past.
Okay, everything you just said was 100% correct. I do want our audience to know that for me, I don't want to give it too much credit for Endgame. And that's not what you're saying. I see what you're saying, that it's a precursor. I don't want people to take away that I think that the Russos were obsessed with this movie, and that's why they're kind of shaping it off that, for sure. And yes, the X-Men movies they are pulling from, the threads they're tying up, are a lot ricketier than what Endgame was doing. So Endgame's a better film, and it's pulling from better films. Okay, so that's just one thing. But I
also think this was retroactive work too, right? Like, I think with Endgame, that was always, there was some sense of where they were heading.
Whereas here,
Bryan Singer had to come back and try to make do with what you're saying, kind of pick up the pieces.
I think the other point you made that's really true is the legacy aspect of it is lacking in comparison to Endgame, and that's another huge difference. The further we get away from the movie, the less impactful it's becoming, whereas Endgame's the more impactful it's becoming the further you get away.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a huge difference there. But again, you got to remove some of the continuity things, and that's the one thing that I didn't like about the Rogue Cut is – the Rogue Cut was, in my opinion, one line too far with that continuity and Easter egg stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yes, what Days of Future Past, the theatrical cut, is doing is tying up all those threads like you were mentioning. But the Rogue Cut is where it feels like, okay, they are forcing it because Rogue was a blah character.
Right.
And so part of it, I think, is like I'm fine just not seeing Rogue because
it's
such a bad adaptation in the live action stuff that it's kind of like I'm okay with that character being finished. But then there are also it becomes like an obsession with continuity to explain where she was, whereas I'm fine with just leaving her off the table for that specific continuity thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it also just makes the movie unnecessarily long. Like, the added length feels like a burden and not a neutral thing to me.
Hmm.
And then I do think that in doing that, there are little, although you can headcanon, practical things that go awry because of it. And it's dumb stuff. Like, it's little stuff. But, like, for example, like, Kitty gets stabbed. She's so incapable of holding Logan that they got to replace her with Rogue. Well, then she's kind of just sitting to the side of Rogue, like super damaged. But then when Magneto needs help, she quickly pops through the wall and grabs Magneto, which that's a different change. In the theatrical cut, it's the girl who makes portals.
Yeah, okay. I was wondering that because I was thinking Kitty,
if she's
Kitty's
so injured, how can she do it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So why change that? Like they're only changing that so that Rogue can be involved. There's also little practical things like they're in the mountains of China, but then – the timeline of it is a little bit sketch where my interpretation of the entire time they're in China is like a night, right? Like 12 hours before they get found. I don't know about you.
I guess I didn't really think about how much time had passed.
Well, I a little bit get bothered that they can just quick get in the jet and go to London or wherever Charles is and grab her and come back.
Oh, I think New York, like Westchester.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Even worse. I mean, even if your jet is the speed of sound, that's an hour or two flight. And so the whole thing would take a 5-hour, at best kind of thing. But again, I know that it's small. I just don't think why introduce some of those practical hurdles for a character that's already lame? So I was really against the Rogue Cut. I thought it made the movie significantly worse. When I shut off the theatrical cut by myself, I wrote down oh my gosh, let's freaking go. This is my genre. It's tight. It's tying up all the threads. It's got awesome action. There's cool acting. The bringing in the old actors and the new actors has got to be so fulfilling for X-Men fans. Like, how cool. Like, the moment with Charles and Eric when they're old of we wasted so many years really moved me. Like, I think that's the difference, Robbie. In 2020, my head was into this film because I knew it was doing stuff well, but we hadn't done the history. Now my heart's in it.
Right.
Like, watching this, I was like, my heart's in this. Holy cow.
Man, first, I it's such a bummer to me that Bryan Singer is someone personally that seems to have caused so much harm you know, that's brought a lot of pain to people, in Logan's words, because he is so good at making superhero movies, or at least making X-Men movies. It's crazy how much you can automatically feel his return here.
Like, and you wonder what the whole series would have been if he was the Kevin Feige of the X-Men.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because we haven't – well, I'm always making the kind of Spider-Man X-Men comparisons just because they were such of a same time. And I think those franchises have dealt with or been, you know, plagued by some of the same issues. But even, you know, to Singer's credit as a director, even if you had Raimi come back, you know, and do the Spider-Man 4 thing that everyone's always wanted him to do for Tobey, which, don't get me wrong, I would love to see. I don't think Raimi has the like nuance to do what Singer can pull off here. Like, I think it is really impressive. You're right. Like, I think if he had not left, I mean, I think it's kind of his fault for leaving the franchise to go do a Superman movie that never really went anywhere either. But yeah, it is crazy to think about. And you know, it is also interesting. Like, we talked about this really early on, but I would be curious to see what level of, like, at what point Kevin Feige, like, stopped having any impact on the direction of the series, because I know he was there kind of up through at least X3, and like how that would have worked if Singer had stuck around. But anyway, that's getting to something else. The road cut, I think I agree with you. One, it was just fun for me to see new scenes. Like, that's always just kind of a treat.
But like you said, you don't even know what isn't supposed to be there anymore.
Yeah, and you know, there are things like that I know enough to, like, there are things where I know, okay, I would remember this if I had seen it. You know, like them breaking into Cerebro and finding Rogue, obviously.
That's the big one. Rescuing her from the mansion while cutting to Eric in the young version stealing the helmet back. That's the big thing. In the road cut, it's every other scene. It's trying to parallel them walking at the same time. But in the theatrical cut, it's literally just young Eric. That's it.
Okay, so that is – I agree with you. The theatrical cut, I think, is stronger. It's tighter. I think with movies like this, that's almost – it's always probably better to lean away from the indulgent, like I was saying.
Like, somebody like Candace would hate the road cut because there's 30 extra minutes that really don't do anything, right? So now it's 2 hours and 45 minutes, and it's kind of like, why?
No,
I think she would hate that part of it.
On paper, it kind of feels like a comic book event where often, like, you'll have these six issues, but then you'll kind of have these tie-ins where they're just trying to figure out a way for Spider-Man to be involved in this big event because any comic that has Spider-Man on it sells. But then you'll read the story and it's like, this doesn't feel like it needed to happen at all. Like, it feels like this is like you set up a problem that's kind of auxiliary to the main event, and then you solve it all within this sort of cabin story, and none of it really impacts the overarching narrative. Like, they create this issue of like, oh, Kitty is hurt and we have to replace her with Rogue. But it's like the fact that the actual plot of the movie is not really impacted at all by that says something to how necessary that is. That said, I did really enjoy the parallel thing. I thought that was fun. I enjoyed that there was a little bit more of Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart in the road cut. Again, this is more just me as a fan enjoying it than, like, I think you're objectively
this
correct.
This is not movie critic Robbie.
Right.
Yeah.
Movie critic Robbie would say, like, I agree with everything you said. I, like, comic book fan Robbie likes a lot of the stuff that we got. I do think that the actual, like, Rogue in Cerebro thing is just kind of strange to me. And on the one hand, really like the moment from Xavier saying, like, oh, well, I know things about that house that they don't. Because it's just kind of like, like in the theatrical cut, there are so many questions about like, okay, how did we wind up here? Where are all these other characters? Like, what's the state of things? Like, where is the X-Mansion? Was it destroyed? Was it like, and none of those are ever answered. Again, that's probably for the best, because as we see here, like once you start pulling on that string, like the whole sweater unravels. I watched Zoolander recently. and it's again, it's for the best not to do that stuff. But as someone that's always wondered about the state of like the canon there, I like getting the extra sure. info. And I guess my big point is, setting the rogue stuff aside, I think I did like some of just the extra scenes that weren't related to Rogue. Not all of them. Like, there are a few that I thought were bad. Like, I thought that the Beast Mystique love scene was bad.
Oh, like bad, bad,
like
dude.
Bad.
Like, made. I said to Annika, like, this is making the movie so cringe.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, and doesn't, again, like, I think this is part of the danger
so
with movies like this, is it's like, okay, we are making an extended cut, but hey guys, let's still maybe exercise some discretion as to what gets into the extended cut. Like, just because we filmed this scene does not mean that we should automatically put it into this other cut. Like,
And it's painfully long. I mean, it's like 5 minutes long, where I kept looking at Annika like, oh my gosh, this is hurting the movie.
And just
please
so,
go away.
Like, because in the original, just to make sure that I'm correct here, isn't it just that Charles tries to stop her in the airport? He doesn't.
Yes.
And then they assume
she
she's
doesn't
going to
come
go
back to the mansion.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Which is, like, even coming back to the mansion doesn't make sense.
No, and it's so it's weird, because I feel like Mystique at this point is beyond that. Like, it's weird.
Correct.
To me to see her like
come back for just like a lovemaking scene, basically.
Yeah. And like, I mean, I was at least glad to see her like destroy Cerebro, just because I was like, okay, well, that makes sense then. Like, at least maybe this was kind of her plan all along, and so it was a little bit more devious. But still, just give me that scene, because that's kind of like, there's even, again, it's better not having this, but given that they wanted to do that, that's another example of like, okay, like there's a nice parallel, because the very first X-Men movie, Mystique sneaks into Cerebro and destroys it, or poisons it essentially, so that Xavier gets hurt next time he uses it. And so to kind of come back to her sneaking into Cerebro and breaking it, like, I do like that.
Whatever.
But yeah. It's not necessary. And if you're going to do that, just do that, right? Like, just show Charles walking down the hall. Because I was like, you know, that was another fun thing where I see James McAvoy kind of limping down the hall. And I'm like, wait, I thought he was back in the chair because he has his powers. Like, how is he walking? Is this a dream? And then to connect, like, oh, he's limping because that's Raven. Like, again, not necessary, not even necessarily additive. But not bad. But then the fact that it was paired with something that was bad, and there are a couple of other things like that that just felt strange to me. But there are also things that I enjoyed, like even just little things. Like, I like the conversation at the beginning. Like, they raise the future X-Men raise with Xavier, like, if you do this, isn't there a chance that we like won't even exist? And I kind of like laying that out and them recognizing like, oh yeah, we are basically sacrificing. Like, if we win, we will cease to exist. Like, that's the best case scenario.
And I think we're in lockstep. This is too much time on the rogue cut. It's making me angry, but you're total right on everything you're saying. You're total right. Like, there were a few individual sequences that were kind of fun. That's one of them for sure. Laying out that it is a sacrifice. There's a couple Logan shots that were cool. I'm not against added Raven scenes like you're saying, but for me, it was a net negative
We saw Quicksilver's little sister. I thought you would like that.
Yes. A little Wanda Maximoff shout out.
Yeah.
Although you know, in that particular instance, there's a little girl, and I was like, is that Wanda? But then they reference that there's another girl upstairs that you never see, that they talk about being kind of weird.
Oh.
Did you catch that? And I wondered if actually Wanda was the girl upstairs.
I bet that's – yeah, that's a good point.
Because aren't they twins technically, and that girl's younger?
Yeah. But yeah. Yeah.
They I both like reference that, like something like she won't talk to me or whatever. I don't know, something. But yeah, I do really, really like that. Okay. More importantly than that, though, I want to talk about Logan, because I think that this is my favorite Logan.
I know.
The actual movie Logan obviously does an incredible job of exploring a very, very jaded, disgruntled Logan who has to soften again, kind of like his origin. But this is like the Age of Ultron Logan, where it's just fun for me to see Logan actually have some patience. And we talked about that from the Wolverine, like how that actually did help that aspect of it. Like,
especially when you get after to this, X3.
Well, yeah, you get to this version of Logan, and the Wolverine did kind of fill the gap between X3 and Days of Future Past. So we were like, okay, I can buy this. But I just, I love him. I love Hugh Jackman. I love the character. I love him waking up in the 70s and being confused. I love him putting it together. I love how he is now the glue for Charles, and the cool inverse that is a story where Charles was that for him and for everybody else, and now he has to be that for them. I love Logan not losing his cool, but I still think he's a badass when he fights. I love him. Like, I love the way he interacts with Eric, young Eric. And I spent a lot of years chasing you down, bub. You know, like – I just love everything about Logan, and having him be the centerpiece of what was the whole franchise, but him now being the centerpiece of the end game of the franchise was so clutch. And the way he acts waking up at the end, like I loved all of it.
I love like part of the stuff that was in the road cut, like all of the extra Logan scenes I enjoyed. Like, so yeah, this is just a great, this is a great version of Wolverine, especially after, like, I mean, if you, depending on how you feel about the Wolverine, this was like the first great on-screen Logan since 2003. Is that right?
Well, X3 is no good either, if that's what you're meaning.
Yeah. And so in 2003 was X2. So it's kind of like, and again, you know, I think the Wolverine is the best other than this after X2. But yeah, it feels like a return to form. I love that after he's kind of the outcast that's saved by the X-Men, like you're saying, it's not just that he has to save Charles. It's that he has to like the entire existence of the X-Men now kind of rests on his shoulders, like him saying, you know, make sure you find Scott and Jean and Storm.
Right.
I did crack up because that line where he's like, Scott, Jean, Storm, remember those names. And I was like, Storm, is that the name that he should remember? Like, isn't that like her like code name?
That's probably because if he said, what is it, Aurora?
Yeah, no one would know who he's talking about.
No one would know who he exactly.
I also, like, the characterization of him was so spot on, where, like, it was because
wise,
he's doing,
mature, badass Logan is so badass.
Yeah, well, and he's doing so much exposition, and it's like you have to be careful with a character like that to not let him get, like, it's kind of the Han Solo thing where he needs to be a little mysterious always and a little unpredictable, and he can't get too like touchy feely, or it loses a lot of what you enjoy about the character. And so I think that's part of why, like, well, one of the many reasons why X-Men Origins Wolverine is such a hard time. But here, like, I feel like he can get serious and get like emotional and personal, and it feels real and earned, but it's also like, it's still Logan. Like, it never feels like he's being, like, even though he's kind of being put in the position of the professor in some ways, he's not the professor. Like, I even love the scenes of, like, they sent back the wrong man, and him being like, yeah, they did. And like,
yeah.
Another like big takeaway I had with Logan that I really loved is that he didn't like, he did not do that good of a job, like, on his mission. he succeeded, like, in a way where it's not like it's, oh, like, Wolverine sucks and he's, you know, inept. But I do appreciate that they didn't, like, send back Wolverine, who we've always known as kind of, like, again, this aloof loner, and that suddenly he's this, like team building, super motivating, like, come on, guys, like, because that would be lame to me. So I like that he kind of doesn't know how to, like, do yes. the Charles role.
Oh, correct. And we talked about in the last episode that there are moments that James McAvoy overacts, and I still think that. But, mm-hmm. like, the Charles and Charles conversation this time, and I'm only bringing this up because, like, Logan doesn't know what to do. And when he says, just go in my head and yeah. talk to him kind of thing, I found that really moving, actually. Like, that's mm-hmm. a huge win for me. And again, it's a win for Logan because you're right. He's not an expert motivator. So he's like, talk to the guy who is. I love that moment. And yeah. I thought it really worked. I also, this is the point where I need to bring up that I thought that John Ottman slayed the score.
Oh, dude, it's how just, great was it to hear that theme again?
It's nice to finally have a modern feeling cinematic movie score in the X-Men mm-hmm. franchise. Yes, to bring in the theme, finally, like, what took everyone so long? All these other composers, I'm looking at you. What took you so long
right.
to finally bring that in? But those moments are really moving with the piano when Charles is talking to Charles, when Logan's mm-hmm. waking up at the end, et cetera. And this is, like, one of the first times in a while. Like, can you remember anything musical from The Wolverine right now off the top of your head? I can't remember a single thing. Like, I can't remember a single thing from X3 musically.
Yeah.
This is the first time where I have moments that I now remember. I do want to add one caveat, and this is a hill I've died on for years that I think is so strange. The very ending of Logan waking up is an exact replica slash mirror of the ending of Inception.
First Avenger. Oh.
No, Inception. Please, wait, the First Avenger.
That's funny.
So I'm going to – I might even do this on social media because I'm just mind blown that this happened and he got away with it. The chord progression is almost identical. It's the same tempo. It might even be the same key, and it's like a solo piano.
Oh,
like,
I know what you're talking about. Okay, yes, yes.
Like Time from Inception from Hans Zimmer. But when you also then pair that with him waking up and looking right. really confused – exactly like Inception when they wake up on the plane and they're like huge wide-eyed staring at each other like, oh my gosh, did we just do that? And like we've been down there for so long, this doesn't even feel recognizable.
Yeah.
So to pair it with the exact same emotional impact and use the same chord progression and key and tempo is like, I don't know how it was okay. How is it not sued? That's how passionate I feel about that. Now, what's weird is it's really effective because it was effective in Inception too. Like, I love it.
Right.
Like, I love that song, but it's weird to me that you can just play the same song again. but that's a tangent I'll die on and we can get on some other time. But what about the First Avenger?
Okay, so not musically, but the scene, like the fact that he kind of comes to and he's hearing that 70s music the same way he was when he first woke up was like, sure. I was immediately like, because then he turns over and it's just a new like sound device playing like old music, but it is the same like Cap wakes up and they're playing 40s music.
But do you understand and hear what I'm talking about?
Oh no, for sure. And I think
musically,
I feel like you showed me that maybe after last time. And I remember,
I think so
now it being in 2020. Like exact. Yeah.
I think I literally sent you like a mashup, right? I put them together. Yeah, I think
that's funny.
Okay. On the waking up front really quickly. Like I love that scene. Right? The lava lamp's a nice touch.
Yeah.
Logan trying to get his bearings. And
oh,
then
you mean the first time
him.
He wakes up.
Yeah. Then there's a girl in bed. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Not the ending. The beginning. Then there's a girl in bed with him. And then those guys walk in. Everything about that's amazing. Where he's like, listen, bub, this is not going to go well for you. I know this goes. Give me your keys and leave and some money. And they're like, what? Then he pulls out the claws and they're not metal. And I love that kind of subtle look. Uh-huh. Although, again, I understand the continuity issues. It's totally jacked up. But I love that subtle look. And then
I think
the
that's
fight
right,
is
though.
Pretty awesome.
Right? Like,
right.
Isn't
he shouldn't
that
have them there.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. Like, I think, I mean, that was one thing that I was kind of struck by here is, like I said, the only origins, like straight up origins reference that I saw was the, like whenever he's in Wolverine's head, when young Xavier is, and he sees a flash of all these things, and you briefly see Victor stepping on his bone claws.
Yeah.
But that was the, like, because I remember reading about this earlier in our rewatch.
Well, and just all the Stryker references, too. That's not just Origins, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I realized, okay, like, to Singer's credit, he did not do a good job of keeping this continuity straight early on when he could have, or even with First Class, which he had a hand in. But I do appreciate now that at least, like, he's even factoring in Origins Wolverine and trying to say, like, yes, everything. So, like, I liked it from our rewatch perspective because everything that we had seen prior to Days of Future Past, like, that all was, like, that original timeline. And that all happened. And so I think that, like, seeing the bone claws there, to me, one, it's just a nice kind of callback. But, yeah, I like that timeline-wise, that does match with what we've kind of talked about with, like, the 60s being the First Class stuff and the 80s being when he gets the adamantium claws.
I love when you make transitions for me, because let's briefly get in the weeds here on the timeline as well.
Yeah.
Because the way they handle time travel here is different than Avengers in some very, very specific ways. So tell me if this understanding is correct, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You have the 60s stuff with First Class. That's the young version of those characters. You know how that movie ends. Charles gets shot, et cetera. Then you have Origins happen later, you know, a decade later or whatever, maybe two decades later, where Logan then is trying to figure out where he comes from, blah, blah, blah. You meet Stryker, et cetera. Then you kind of go from that to X1, 2, and 3, where they're older now. It's happening in, like, the early 2000s, late 90s, et cetera. And all of that journey happens to lead them to, you know, whatever, a few years after all of that is now post-apocalyptic, which I talked about in the last episode, does bother me a little bit, Robbie. It bothers me how quickly it went from, like, nice to the worst thing ever. Bother me. Not just with the Wolverine. It's a little too fast to have, like, full-blown robotic control, you know? like death camps. Cities like New York. New York looks like it's been in ruins for 100 years, in my opinion.
Right. No, for sure. I will say, like, as much as it and it's part of why it felt random, but I do like that the road cut, you do actually see other people, like, that they're holding Rogue there. And it's like, okay, there are humans. This is not
for sure.
Because otherwise it's like, are there only six people, like, still alive in the entire world?
It's amazing how I'm in the post-apocalyptic genre right now with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, The Last of Us last year, Fallout I just watched a couple weeks ago. Like, it's all kind of the same vibe. Silos, kind of the same vibe. That's been the last 2 years for me. Multiverse and post-apocalyptic. Anyways, that's kind of what they're painting. And then the Wolverine's right after X3, where he's now in Japan doing some missions. And then you get this movie. But here's the kicker, right? Tell me if I'm wrong on this. Logan then goes back to the 70s. So this is pre-Origins, post-First Class.
Yep. So everything that happened in First Class happened.
Still happened.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yep.
Well, then, because he changes the event of Mystique choosing to walk away, it then wipes out everything that happened beyond that, right? So now, technically, none of those other movies existed, X1, 2, and 3. Yes, and the Wolverine. We know them.
And
we've
gotten
to see them. You're right. So besides First Class now, you would have First Class, and then anything else is open to interpretation. Maybe Logan doesn't get picked up by Stryker. Maybe those other superheroes, the girl that makes the portals, like, maybe her mother doesn't give birth to her. Maybe her mother marries someone else. It's not a branch timeline. It's not another multiverse. It is the same timeline now reversed.
Yeah.
So theoretically, you could just show somebody First Class and Logan to catch them up with where they are now.
Yeah.
Because the end of it, Days of Future Past, doesn't really advance the plot much other than it's saying it wiped out the others. Does that make sense? You don't go much further right. into time.
Right. And that's where I say, like, I understand why Singer did what he did, because it is kind of an interesting, like.
Right. Like, MCU fans would be furious if this theory was executed on their films.
Oh, yeah.
Because what it is basically saying is none of that stuff happened or mattered anymore. So, I mean, it would never work in the MCU. I'm sure there were X-Men fans that were pissed to just abandon continuity. However, having now gone through the whole journey, I understand why Singer did that as basically a soft reboot, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of taking it all back. Like, I think even getting James Marsden to come back at the end was just, like, I right. think Singer's...
But it was awesome, wasn't it?
I mean, I think Singer's basically saying, like, hey, everything that's happened to this franchise since I left sucks. I'm going to, like, come up with an in-universe way to erase all of it because my stuff was better. I think the bummer is, like, and this is where I'm really interested to keep going in the rewatch now, at least to the next one, because I have, like, I think I've seen most of Apocalypse, but not the whole thing, and I haven't watched it with any real focus. Like, I think it was one that I put on in the background one day. And so, like, but, you know, it is Bryan Singer, and this movie's so good. Oh, now, man. I know that Apocalypse, like, the reason why I haven't really watched it is because it was not reviewed very well. And so I know that it's, like, going to be a step down, obviously. But I am curious, like, how much of a step down it can be or why it is. And so, you know, we'll get into all that. Yeah. But I think, like,
that's next time.
Execution aside, I had never thought of what Singer is kind of setting up here and how interesting it is, because yes, he's kind of undoing a lot of things by, like, erasing the even his original X-Men films, but he also isn't, because Logan still has a memory of all of that. So what I like is that, like, even if you look at Logan, the film, as a follow-up to the originals, it still works, because Logan is still the guy that experienced, like, from his perspective, that was his experience. Like, and that's what
right.
I think is
and
really
it
interesting.
Seems like he was right. And it seems like he was going to fill in Charles, right? So Charles probably knows too now, or at least he didn't live it, but he's heard it from Logan.
Yeah, and he knows that.
I think that's, like, the implication of the ending.
Yeah, like, I think he knew that at one point Logan would wake back, like, the Logan that came back to the 70s would wake up again. Now, I did have the thought for the first time here that, like, in a way that feels like you're kind of stealing a life away from the alternate Logan. Like, I was thinking, okay, there's a Logan that's, like, a history teacher now, that, like, whatever has happened between the 70s and now, like, he's living in the X mansion. He's a professor or whatever. And then now he wakes up and he has no memory of that. And that's kind of, I don't know how you think about that, because I guess the original Wolverine is the one that's waking up. And so it was just, there was an alternate version of him kind of that lived several decades. But it is kind of a bummer from, like, that Wolverine's perspective that, like, now I guess he's just is kind of dead. Like, whoever that was, like, whatever life experiences he had, they end
dead.
At that
it's
moment.
It's the same person. It's the same person.
But it's not the same
person. He has those memories. But he kind of has some of those memories, right?
But I don't think he has any of the, like, I don't think that Logan, I guess Xavier could, like, kind of transfer those memories back into him in some way so that he kind of has both histories. Cause I mean, that is what he says at the end. He's going to fill him in, but it's just kind of weird to me to think that, like, like 50 years of your life is now just like totally undone. Like that's the, but again, it doesn't really matter. But I do
from Charles's perspective too. Am I understanding this correctly? So Charles is James McAvoy. He's whatever, 25 years old, 28 years old. And then he sees Logan get launched into the river by Magneto. Then the conflict gets averted. They're pretty sure they did the right thing. But then they go on to live a life, right? So he starts a school. He probably at some point reconnects with Logan, whatever Logan's gone through. And Logan then becomes a teacher. But he knows there's a chance eventually that Logan may remember what happened in the 70s.
Yeah.
That's the understanding there?
Yeah.
And it just literally took 30 years?
Well, because I think that like – well, I think that the reason why it happens when it does is because that is Logan waking up on the same day that he went back. Like that. I think it's supposed to be that like,
oh, that, so that's like 2017 or whatever.
Right. I think it's actually 2023 is like the year it was supposed to be.
So the exact day that it was post-apocalyptic that he was sent back, now it's not post-apocalyptic. He's in a school. It's the same date. Okay,
yeah,
that's cool.
I think that's why he has like the same gray like strip in his hair, because it's supposed to be like, okay, he's the exact same age. And so I think that like – which is cool. So like we now know that like the future has changed so much that like we are on the exact same post-apocalyptic day. That is no longer post-apocalyptic.
And it's very nice. Okay, that's my closing thought. The last third of this movie is spectacular.
Oh, man.
Let's freaking go. But dude, once you get to kind of like the escalation of this, this is so good, man. Trask, the president, the dynamic between the mutants and the humans and trying to stop Raven. And then the conversations you get between old Charles and Eric, the conversation we get between Charles and Charles, like the hope conversation, dude, really moved me that they need hope again. And then with that music I was talking about, and then even at the very end when Logan wakes up and he sees Scott, it's a perfect, like, it's such a shocker because you don't remember Scott's there. And then he goes like, whoa, easy. Like, I'm talking fast because I got so fired up by the ending and the editing of young Charles desperately pleading with a Raven. And by the way, I have chills right now. I have chills. But then realizing, like, I'm done controlling you. Like, you have to make the decision. But I think you can make the right decision, but I'm not going to influence you anymore. And that being the key twist is so sick. And then the way Magneto leaves is sick. And then just editing that at the same time of the Sentinels attacking, which is a dope fight, like Storm blowing up all the Sentinels and then Magneto overcharging the ship to make a huge explosion. And then it's still being shocking because they're still surviving and like zombies climbing up the mountain.
Yeah.
And then like how they're breaking through and how Magneto forms a wall. The Storm death is shocking. And then Magneto forms a wall. And then the actual shot of in slow motion as they do it, the laser beam coming to their heads, and then all of a sudden it's all gone. Like, just a magnificent final third that I love so much. Like, literally a let's freaking go.
Yeah. It's, which is so nice because that's been like the third act of every movie again since X2 has been like where things went fully off the rails. Like, not saying that those movies would have been salvaged otherwise, but certainly, like, even the Wolverine, like the third act is what brings that movie down, I think, a good 20 or 30%. And so it's executed so well here. But like the biggest part of that for me, like, one, I should say, I thought McAvoy, he does still overact some here, but two lines, basically. He's considerably better than in First Class. So I should say that.
I think it's really good, man. There's two lines that are overdone, but the rest of it's really good.
No, I agree.
Like, and I can't say it on this podcast, but I like when he says, I'm going to say the same thing you said to me.
Oh,
like when
yeah.
he starts calling Logan out, weren't you the guy that we came looking for? Like, I love that version.
No, I do too. I think, and is the line, what's the line that you're thinking of? The overacting line?
So much pain.
Yes.
Is maybe a little much for me. I did that pretty good, right?
Yeah, that was good.
There's that one, and there's one other one.
Because I think for me, it was like
mostly like,
oh man.
Yeah, that's maybe like that's the other one kind of thing.
Tell me.
It's just like Loki. But he's doing a really, really good job beside that. Like,
yeah,
when
he doesn't
have hope. Like I said, talking with old Charles is so cool.
I like disenchanted Charles much more than I like 60s Playboy Charles.
Oh, for sure. For sure. That was a weird thing. When he's talking about Cerebro and he goes, it won't work. It's not that it's broken. It's not the power. It's that I'm broken in here, inside. Like that stuff.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought he did a much better job.
No. I thought I joke, but yeah, I think McAvoy did great here. And
the scene also where he decides not to take the serum is really moving. And then he says, Hank, I'm going to need help.
Yeah.
Like that. I love it.
Well, and even just like the vulnerability of the visual there of him being carried. And there are a couple of moments and I'm curious what the script says here versus what McAvoy did kind of as improv. But like the line when they're on the jet and he's telling Eric why he doesn't have his powers anymore. And Eric's like, oh, so you gave up your power so that you could walk. And Charles is like, I gave up my power so I could sleep. And he like starts to say like, so I can sleep.
Yeah.
But then he like stops himself because he's like choking up. And then he's like, I don't want to talk about it. Like that to me works really well. Like that feels like McAvoy like interacting with the script and kind of claiming it and doing some real work there instead of just like I feel like that's not how that scene would have played out in First Class.
Sure.
But all that to say, because I know we're wrapping here, I want to say like, yes, McAvoy, I think, did a great job. But if Fassbender was the standout in First Class, I think even when we have a lot of great performances in this movie, I still think Fassbender is the standout in Days of Future Past. I love his Magneto so much. It is such a cool character, and that like baseball, like I don't even know what you would call that because that's not the field that he picks up, the stadium, I guess.
Just the shell of the stadium,
is like one. Just the visual of that is so cool. The way he does it, I love the costume that he has there at the
and
end,
and the music is finally good for him too. At the same time.
It's so cool. His outfit
is the coolest freaking outfit I've ever seen with his helmet on.
Yeah.
And as he levitates in. And here's the irony of the whole situation, Robbie. If Michael Fassbender was still into it, they could still use him as Magneto now. You can start fresh as a character, but he's the right age for it to still work.
He's not super old
and he's not super young. If you could find a way to bring Magneto in now into the MCU, you could still have Fassbender.
I know. And I'm like, you're right. It would be kind of perfect because like I always felt like they started probably a bit too old.
Too late.
With Stewart and McKellen.
But for sure.
Yeah, if they started now, you know, because Fassbender's what I assume like in his 40s, early 50s.
Oh, a Magneto that's 50 to 60 is perfect.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's just it's so well done here. And I love, like, especially after what we talked about in X3, where I feel like all of the things that Magneto did there were so uncharacteristic of him. Like, I really appreciate this characterization where he is even more so than, like, I would say this is an improvement over Magneto in the first X-Men film because, like, there's always that, which you get a quick reference to here. Like there's the fact that he was willing to kill Rogue rather than like sacrifice himself. That was always the thing that Logan points out where it's like, yeah, that is a villain move. Like if you were really just concerned, like if you wanted to make everyone into a mutant for the betterment of all mutants, like you should be the one that goes down for that. We talked about that in the first film, but I like that kind of like that aside, Eric is like, he's always willing to do the thing that he thinks is correct, and he won't compromise, but he's also going to be consistent. Like right. Even
this now feels like the X-Men 97 Magneto.
Yes.
In lockstep.
Like, I love whenever there's that conversation with him and Raven where he's like, she says something about him lying to her, and he's like, I've never lied to you. Like, and I never will.
Right.
And
it's he just tried to kill her, and now they're face to face, and he's just talking to her. Like, you look beautiful.
Yeah. And he's like, well, yeah, I did try to kill you because, like, that's what, like, I'm doing that to save all of the mutants. And it's like, he doesn't backtrack or try to apologize or explain it away. Like, but he's like, but I, you know, like, no hard feelings. I just, that's the thing that has to be done. Like, he's just such a great character. And I guess even as I'm saying that, like, there is more in common with, because he is willing to kill Raven in the same way he's willing to kill Rogue. I think that my hang up there with the Rogue thing is still that, like, I think that if Fassbender, if there, for some reason, you know, if he were confronted with that problem of, like, I can do something to save all of mutants, but it would require me dying. I think that he would just like take it on himself. That's like my read of this version of Magneto. And that's why I think it works, like, because it just feels like there's something like weirdly honorable in him, even though he's willing to do really terrible things. It's just, oh, it's so cool.
It's so cool.
We are.
I'm glad you're fired up too. Because you were a little bit not as fired up last time.
No, so. I know. I had a great time. And so to kind of, we're going to talk some about the timeline more on the feed, I think, between now and when we hit up Apocalypse. But I did want to, I guess, leave us with, I keep referencing what I think Singer was trying to do here, because I think it's the first time that this really clicked. I wanted to leave us with, like, what I guess I see as the way this could go moving forward without really weighing in on how those movies actually did it. Like, I like that in the original trilogy, it's, you know, around like 2000 and people are aware of mutants because they have all the legislation, but you get the sense that, like, people are not, like, there aren't all of these mutants, like, in the public eye. Like, I feel like people don't even know that Jean Grey is a mutant when she's giving that speech at the beginning of the first film. It's this thing where it's like a new problem that's kind of still mysterious, but people know just enough to be afraid of mutants. And that's clearly a very different timeline than here, where we are, like, people are seeing across the world televised Magneto and Mystique in the 70s. And what I think is really cool about that is not only can we now tell a different story, like, we can tell a much more, like, classic, almost X-Men 97 feeling story, because we're now going back to, like, okay, this is, like, we have a known thing. Like, we now, everyone knows that there are these mutants. We now have, like, teams that can be out there and doing things more publicly. And it feels like just a totally different take on the characters, like, or the IP, I guess, where it's like, now we're going to look at, like, not just, like, younger versions of, like, James Marsden and Halle Berry's characters, but, like, totally different versions that would have been created had we had, like, mutants, you know, thrust into the forefront decades earlier than they actually were. And so instead of, like, Cyclops being picked up by Xavier at the end of Origins, like, I assume he's going to be picked up by McAvoy's Xavier much earlier than that. And that, I mean, there are probably other continuity issues there that we'll get into, but I guess this was the first time that it dawned on me the potential for this approach. Like, I started off the episode talking about how this works so well as a cap to all of the prior X-Men stuff. But I do think it was pretty elegant as like as the soft reboot like you're talking about, to where now we're like, okay, well, what did happen then? Like, what happened between the 70s and these X-Men that we're now picking up with in that final scene with Logan? And the idea of going back in and filling in all those decades, I do think is really interesting. So I'm legitimately curious to see how that goes and what they do with that, because I just have very little memory of Apocalypse. But I'm going to choose to be optimistic in this moment and hope for, yeah, I'll hope for the best, because hope, right?
That's right. Well, X-Men Apocalypse is our next film. But Robbie, that is always one thing that has a little bit bothered me about Logan, which Logan is a masterpiece as a standalone film. If you didn't have a ton of this and you just watched it, you'd be like, this is unbelievable. But if Days of Future Past kind of resets us to a quote-unquote Age of Ultron timeline type thing where now the whole team is back together and operating well, it is a little bit of a bummer that we didn't – to me, it's a bummer that we didn't see more of that then before stuff just apparently is still awful in Logan. Like,
right.
We kind of healed the issue for mutants, and then – not that long after, we're kind of in a very similar place, just in a desert now. I don't know.
Yeah.
Although the movie itself is amazing. But it didn't take, in my opinion, what Days of Future Past did and run with it.
Yeah. That's why I'm curious after we've gone through all of this to talk about Logan. Because again, like, I don't think that I've ever watched that movie with this kind of perspective. But I've always had right. the same issue. Like, it is kind of a, like, it's just, it's sort of like Star Wars a bit, where, like, things end on such a great note. Like, not yeah. necessarily qualitatively, but, like, this, like, everything has been, like,
episode
this
six.
Total, yeah, victory at the end of episode six. And then, like, the next time you meet them, it's, like, the exact, everything is terrible again. There's an empire again, essentially, like, where you wish that you had maybe a chance to just see like a Star Wars film where the Jedi, like, everything's going pretty well. Like, obviously they right. would still have some problems, but yeah, like, there is a, you know, and I guess in Singer's defense, he was probably able to get all of the cast back for like a scene, but maybe people weren't interested in returning to that future timeline.
For sure. Yeah, and we're going to get into Logan a little bit later, obviously. It's an amazing standalone film. But I can't think of the MCU comparable, but it feels almost like maybe Guardians 3, where it's really, really well done. And it is dealing with a few of the things in its own world, like Charles still being there.
Right.
But it also kind of, while all that's true, feels a little bit isolated from the other plots. And I guess, like, if Days of Future Past feels like the end game, I kind of wish there was a little bit more of an endgame type follow up to it, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do think the strange thing about it, like, on paper, it makes sense that, OK, like, this is the state of the world. And then some years later, we meet up with Logan and everything has gotten a lot worse. Like, that's fine. Like, there aren't any continuity issues, but thematically, it is like, I mean, it's like with Endgame, if you ended on like the Tony speech, and then Cap is back in time, and it's like you just have this sense of like everything's full circle and it's very satisfying. And then like the next time, like, you know, we got another movie and it's like Cap, but the whole world is destroyed and really sad, and it would
Star Wars is a good example as well. Yeah,
it would just be like, man, yeah, that was such a nice way to end this, and I'm not like, this is still a, like, yeah, it doesn't take away from that story at all. But I am, one thing with Logan that I'm really curious to track here that story is famously adapted from a comic that is like an alternate universe story. Like in the comics, there's this whole kind of run of old man Logan comics and things that have spun out of that. And it's all just based on like, here's this alternate reality where the villains won and basically all the heroes are either dead or like in hiding. And then Wolverine is now this old.
Interesting.
And so that's
kind of almost how I view the film as well, basically.
Yeah. That's why I think like, I kind of do too. Like I don't think it's very helpful to view that film in continuity. Like
but Kevin Feige does, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it conflicts with it. I just wonder, I'm really curious to see what they do in Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah, correct.
Because like, you know, it's unclear.
Perfect
what
tie-in.
I mean, I don't think have any confirmation what universe that Wolverine is from. So correct. I don't know if it's like it could be that Deadpool is finding him like between Days of Future Past and Logan, which would actually be really interesting.
Right. Or a different version, just because
it could just be a totally different universe.
The Logan version did not, quote, let his whole universe down. In fact, he died to save it. So it doesn't feel like the Logan version is the same one in Deadpool and Wolverine to me from the trailer. So maybe
unless it was like some reference to him, you know, allowing Charles to do what he did, you know, like I'm trying to remember if Logan carries any guilt for that or if that's on Charles.
No, but he also, again, we'll talk about Logan later. It could be. But like my point is like that would be one way to make Logan, in my opinion, even better is if retroactively they did say that it was an alternate universe, not trying to tie it in because of Deadpool and Wolverine. Like maybe this is a version, maybe the Deadpool and Wolverine Logan is a post Days of Future Past Logan that doesn't ultimately end up in the Logan. Does that make sense? Like maybe this is what happened to, like maybe that version failed his universe eventually, but not in the same way that the Logan movie shows. Maybe the Logan movie is another multiversal thing. And that's actually one way I think they could retcon and make that movie better. I don't know if that makes sense, but.
No, I mean, like, I think what's hard about it is that that movie does do some good,
like
bookend stuff to Logan's story.
But so does Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
Days of Future Past, he doesn't die, but he's sacrificing himself.
Yeah. You know, I think this is where the Marvel Studios time travel theory could come into play and to great effect. You're right, because
yeah, correct.
We
that's
could
a
get
branch
a world,
timeline version.
Exactly. Like that it could be that like yes, there is one reality where after Days of Future Past this is what happens, but there are also other realities where that isn't the case. And oh man, I actually just thought about something that'll be really interesting for us to cover when we get there, but I don't want to spoil anything. But yeah, I think man, between what we have existing in the X-Men franchise already on the time travel front and whatever Deadpool and Wolverine is going to do, which there's no telling because they can literally do whatever they want based on like the Deadpool of it all and the TVA of it all. It would be really fun for them to take some bold swings like that.
Totally agree. Okay, so for me, my current X-Men journey Foxverse rankings, as I said, I think X2 is a critically tighter film, especially given the time it was trying to do it. I think your comparison to Spider-Man 2 and No Way Home is apt. The highs are higher here for me than they are in X2, mm-hmm. but the lows are probably a little bit lower, especially mm-hmm. if you watch the road cut with like the lovemaking scene, et cetera. So that being said, I do like No Way Home more than Spider-Man 2. And so I'm just going to do my rankings based off my preference.
Yeah.
Acknowledging that, but moving on. So I'm going to go Days of Future Past 1, X2, 2. I'll call them 1A, 1B.
Mm-hmm.
X1 next, then First Class 4, The Wolverine 5, X-Men 3, The Last Stand 6, and then Origins 7.
I
and I'm excited to add Apocalypse and Logan to that.
Yeah. Well, and Dark Phoenix and New Mutants.
Oh, and Dark Phoenix. Yeah, I haven't seen Dark Phoenix. Oh, yeah, let's go. Let's go. Oh, I just got excited again.
Which, you know, by the way, this movie was written by Simon Kinberg, who does direct Dark Phoenix. So, like, there is some a through line there, even though Singer isn't there for that one. I will say, one, by the way, talking about the book ending, I did want to say that the Rogue cut, I agree, is worse, but there is one more, like, to your point, the continuity of it, like having Wolverine and Rogue kind of end up doing that together is kind of a nice nod if you wanted this to be the finale, but I'm not going to get back into that. But, like, my ranking, I think, is the same as yours. This is a tougher call for me than No Way Home and Spider-Man 2, because I think Spider-Man 2 is a pretty perfect Spider-Man film. And there are a lot of things that X2, like we talked about, like we don't get some of the characters that I want a lot from in an X-Men movie. Like, so many characters are taken off the board, including Xavier for a lot of it, Cyclops for virtually all of it. Whereas, like, in Days of Future Past, we get a lot of kind of very classic feeling X-Men stuff. But I don't think I can. It's like almost a dead tie, because I just can't get over how fun it is to watch Wolverine do his thing in X2, like, with the adamantium claws. Like, I don't know that Wolverine has ever been cooler than when he leaps off the balcony and takes down those soldiers in the mansion. It's like, hey, and this is like,
you do you.
Well, it's also that movie came out when I was 12, and I don't know that I've ever gotten past the way I saw that movie when I was 12. And that's part of it for sure. But I think like, gun to my head, my ranking would probably be exactly the same as yours. I think maybe X2 is just slightly closer to Days of Future Past for me than it is for you.
Well, for sure. I mean, I was blown away by X2 as well, if you remember that. So
yeah,
those two, in my opinion, are clearly the best so far. And then there's a gap.
But there's not much of a gap
between these two.
Yeah, there's very little, if any, gap between these two. Then I feel like there's a little gap between X1 and First Class. Like between these two and X1 and First Class. And then a big gap.
You know, if you use the Endgame comparison, there is a tiny bit of like an Infinity War Endgame thing here, where shot for shot, Infinity War is the tightest film possible. Like, there's not a second wasted. Every edit is exactly how you want it. But Endgame does some stuff that Infinity War didn't have to do. There's a little bit of a comparison there, for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Thank you so much for going on this journey with us. We're not done. We got some really fun ones coming up. And thank you for supporting us here on Friends from Work Plus. It means everything to us. Thank you. We love you guys. We'll see you right back here next time on Friends from Work Plus.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
From a fast break to recovery, Indiana hospitals are here for every Hoosier, regardless of their ability to pay. That's why we're teaming up with legislators on a winning playbook to lower costs and protect access to care across our communities. Because good policy doesn't leave anyone on the sidelines. Learn more at HoosierLifeline.com.